One, hold the paper up. One, two, three.
You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, December 12th, 2013. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, David Dayen on the hitting disaster in the new budget talks and the attacks on pensions in Illinois. And here's a little hint. Pensions have something to do with that new budget as well. Also on the program, Michigan passes a law saying that health insurance cannot automatically cover a woman's abortion. Confirmations on the Hill of President Obama's judicial nominees and executive nominees is going forward at a slow and bizarre pace because Republicans have a show to put on. The TPP, not this year, folks. Not this year. Of course, there's only 2 weeks left in the year. So Bitcoins have a little bit of a problem, it seems. And for those of you who work in the finance industry, who listen to the program and are worried that Hillary Clinton will not be be in any way bashing you or hold you responsible for the 2008 financial crisis, fear not. Apparently, she was at a Goldman Sachs talk. Well, to be fair, she was paid to talk to them. And assuring everyone in the room, you won't get that from me. Phew! I was so worried. So worried.
People should, you know, be like, go to Steubenville and other places. Just be like, don't worry. We'll not hold frat or football culture accountable for that incident either.
That's like sort of, you're saying, do birds poop in the woods? And do you really need to actually show people pictures of it? That's basically what you're saying, right? This is, I'll take it with a grain of salt. It's from Politico, but do you really, I mean, salt probably contains no sodium. I don't know how many analogies I can put into this. In Politico, on a recent afternoon, executives at Goldman Sachs invited a few hundred major investors to the auditorium, the firm's gleaming headquarters in Lower Manhattan. Hillary Clinton declared that the banker bashing so popular within both political parties was unproductive and indeed foolish. She told the audience, in effect, we all got into this mess together. Huh. And we're all going to have to work together to get out of it. It's really like the functional equivalent of you've got a drunk guy steering a boat into an iceberg. And yes, we're all in this together. We don't need to spend the time to. But once we're in the lifeboats and once we're on dry land, I think it could be time. But no. What the bankers heard her to say what the bankers heard her to say. Beating up the finance industry isn't going to improve the economy. It needs to stop. It was like, quote, here's someone who doesn't want to vilify us, but wants to get business back in the game, said an attendee. Like, maybe here's someone who can lead us out of the wilderness. I don't even know what the F wilderness they're talking about. Dow has broken through in records. You have corporations making record profits. If that's the wilderness, folks, yeah, send me there. Look at that survival Sam thing going again.
You might have to withstand a few shabby commentaries on the Majority Report, occasional critical columns in the Republic.
Oh, my God. It's just, I can't stand the idea of taking that jitney. What am I taking a jitney? Taking a helicopter out to the Hamptons. And I have to think about Alex Perrine being so mean to me.
Who is the guy who compared, there was a hedge fund guy who compared Obama's comments on bankers literally to Nazism.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this was a couple years ago. It's a pretty...
Unbelievable. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to David Dayan. Hey, Majority Report listeners, as you know, Credo Mobile is sponsoring the program. They've got a great deal for you that ends December 14th. Now, I've talked about Credo in the past. Credo Action, they fight for progressive values. Credo Mobile donates 1% of its revenue to nonprofit progressive organizations. They got a great deal for you, and I'm going to say this a couple of times. They are now offering non-Android phones. That's as explicit as I can be about it. You got to check out credomobile.com/Sam to figure out what I'm saying. You get 25% off your monthly data plan for 2 years with your 2-year Credo Mobile service agreement. You also get up to $350 credit on your Credo bill to pay off your changeover fees to Credo. And again, Credo is now offering more than just Android phones. Go to credomobile.com/Sam. Check it out now. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program. He writes for just about everyone now who has a quality publication. David Dayan. David, do you want to plug one in particular?
Well, I'm a contributing writer to Salon.com. I also have stories on occasion at the New Republic and the American Prospect and the Guardian and all places internet. But the best way to
go to your Tumblr site.
That's correct. DavidDayan.tumblr.com. That has links to every story I write. So
that's the way, way I start my day, buddy. See what you got. What you got for us next?
Sorry. I'm sorry that's the way you started. I'm very sorry.
All right, let's start from west to east. We will start in Illinois and then head to Washington, D.C. The story is not it's not dramatically different. You know, and let me preface this by saying that and I think I've told this story a couple of times on this program, about 3 or 4 years ago, I hosted some ostensibly comedy show at an Aspen Ideas Festival. It was the last time I was ever there. And one of the guests was Grover Norquist. And every time I turned to Grover, he just railed on public employees. And this was about 4 years ago. And I at one point I had to stop him. I say, look, Grover, we're trying to be lighthearted here. You know, there's no TV. Why do you keep saying this over? It was complete, like, it was complete non sequiturs. And it was as if he was just trying out a talking point. And it turns out it was the case. And now we're starting to see the results of this.
Yeah.
We had Detroit. We've spoke about Detroit on this program about a week ago. And then on that same day, December 3rd, Illinois decided to take it out on their public employees.
Yeah. Illinois is one of those states that there are seven of them in the country which have constitutional clauses protecting the impairment of public pensions. And in Illinois, it's one of the strongest in the nation. It says that current retirees who worked their careers under a promise that they would get a certain amount in a pension after they retired, that those pensions could not be impaired. And even current workers who are working under a certain contract could not have that cut midstream. It could not they could not impair the pension midstream. Nonetheless, in Illinois, a Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor secured a new pension bill in a special session, a one-day session, where benefits will be cut through the cost of living adjustment, and not just for current workers and new hires, but current retirees. So this is people who worked all their lives with the and deferred wages, because basically that's how it works. When you make a contract between a union and a state, you're saying, okay, we're going to take these wages and we're going to push them off and make them part of my pension benefit, and then I'll work for lower wages in the interim. And so now, basically, the state has said, all right, you worked for lower wages your entire career. Now we're not going to keep our obligation, and we're going to cut your pension, even though there's a constitutional restriction on us doing that. But we're going to try to appeal to the court and get around that.
I mean, this is just it's just unbelievable. It's enraging. I mean, look, the idea that I mean, it's almost hard for me to express it, but it's. You've got, it's one thing to say to people, before you take this job, you should know that we're paying you less. But yeah. to screw people after the fact, we're just going to just cut your pay, retroactively, which is what they're telling, anybody who signed that contract, but it's even more egregious for people who are actually retired now. And tell us what, there are some states where workers don't get Social Security. They don't pay into Social Security, right?
Right?
I mean,
right.
Tease
and Illinois is one of them. Illinois is one of them. Illinois is one of 15 states that do not participate in the Social Security program. At the beginning of Social Security, no state employees could participate because there were constitutional questions around whether the federal government could charge a state, basically tax a state, because the employer pays half of the payroll tax. So there were these constitutional questions around it, and they said, all right, state employees won't and local will not pay into the program. However, there are these agreements that the IRS basically makes with states, if they want them, voluntary agreements, that allow state workers, city workers, to participate in the program. Many states have done that, but 15 states haven't. Illinois is one of them. 80% of the workers that will be affected by this cut to their pension do not participate in the Social Security program. That means they didn't pay in, all their careers, but it also means they don't get the benefit. And so this pension represents their entire retirement income outside of any savings that they have managed to scrape together. And so it's bigger than just cutting the pension as one leg of the stool, but it's actually two legs of the stool that get cut, because there is no Social Security as a backup for these particular workers. And the average benefit of an Illinois worker is something around $30,000 a year in retirement, which sounds good, but if you consider that a healthy portion of it is you know, they don't participate in Social Security and it's their entire retirement income, it looks significantly worse for these workers.
And so what is the cut going to amount to? Do you have a sense of that?
We don't know the exact number, but it looks to be thousands and thousands of dollars, certainly over the course of the retirement that Illinois workers will have. And, of course, we don't know at all what the average cut is going to be in Detroit, which happened, as you said, on the same day, where city workers have even a smaller retirement package. Their average pension benefit is something like $19,000 a year. And because a federal bankruptcy judge said the federal government preempts the state constitutional restriction in Michigan around pension benefits, impairing pensions, they could be slashed in large ways. And the real point here is that if you're a city or state worker and you entered into this contract arrangement with your employer, and they said, we're going to give you this pension, and there's even a constitutional clause that says there's no way this pension can be cut, and it gets cut anyway, then you can't ever in a future contract bargain and say, I'm going to defer these wages into a retirement program.
You'd be an idiot.
You'd be a complete idiot to do that. So what it signals to me is this slow demise of the public pension. That, you know, there is no way that city or state workers could ever make that bargain again if every other state and city has seen that they can merely shed their obligations on a whim.
I want to get to the implications of that, because these have bigger, I mean, obviously it's huge implications for any future negotiations. It has in terms of members, you know, city workers, but it also has implications of what happens to all of that money that down the road. Before we get there, just tell me a little bit about what's happening in terms of the economy in Illinois. I mean, because if we have this attack, right, we're going to be taken away. We're going to basically say, I mean, and people should also remember what happened with AIG, right? We could not, in light of the fact, I mean, we were talking about, never mind a bankruptcy, we were talking a full-on federal bailout of AIG, and we were told by the Secretary of the Treasury, look, we're not in a position to deny these people their bonuses. They have a contract.
They have a contract, right. And it really must depend on who is on the other side of that contract. When it's a wealthy banker or an insurance company, part of the finance sector, then that contract is sacred. When it's sanitation engineers and firefighters and policemen and teachers and city clerks, then that contract suddenly isn't so sacred, that contract can be slashed. Even if the Constitution of the state says it can't, that contract is allowed to be slashed. So it really depends on who makes the contract in America, apparently.
I heard a lot of those right-wingers in Michigan screaming about the idea that the Supremacy Clause, that we could actually see a federal bankruptcy law trump the state constitution. The protests were massive.
Because they are all states' rights conservatives. And by the way, just to point out, because the common theory is that, well, the cities and states would really like to honor these contracts, but they're broke. They don't have any money. They can't. They made promises they couldn't keep, etc. On the same day that the Detroit bankruptcy came down, the Michigan legislature approved, I think, $400 million for a new hockey arena in the city of Detroit. On the same day that Illinois did its pension bill, they passed a large multi-million-dollar corporate tax break for Archer Daniels Midland. So the idea that there's no money out there is ridiculous. There's plenty of money out there if you're building a stadium and you're an extremely wealthy sports owner, or if you're a large agribusiness corporation. There's just no money for workers.
And so, okay, so I understand in Detroit how the judge found that the federal bankruptcy laws supersede the Constitution. I mean, I haven't really sort of dug into it from a sort of a precedent level, but I understand the dynamic here. How is it that the simply by a state law that they could supersede the Constitution? I mean, who's suing on the grounds that this?
Yeah, they put in an additional rider that allow workers will pay 1% less toward their retirement. Now, that doesn't mean that the whole thing's neutral somehow, that this evens everything out. They wouldn't have done the pension bill if it didn't save money. In fact, it's projected to save something on the order of $100 billion over 30 years. But the legislature claims that because workers have to pay a little bit less into their retirement funds, into their pension fund, then that evens it all out and that will make it constitutional somehow. Now, obviously, AFSCME, Illinois, and some of the coalitions of the other unions that represent these state workers aren't buying that, and they are suing to overturn this and make the law void. But that will be a long process, and we'll have to see how that plays out. And I can tell you that other states are certainly looking at that, because if Illinois can get away with this, you can bet that
anybody
plenty
can.
Of other states will try.
Right, yeah. Any state can. Now, so the argument, if I understand it, as you're expressing it from the Illinois state legislator, the Democratic-controlled state legislator and the Democratic governor, is that, hey, you know, you may have paid me 50 grand to, you know, 25 grand to redo your kitchen. You know, we didn't put in any cabinets. We didn't put in any dishwasher. We left out the refrigerator. But here, I'll tell you what, here's $3,000 back.
Right?
I mean, that's basically
the
argument.
The whole thing is that they made a contract with these people and said that they're going to pay them X amount of dollars, $5,000, after they built the kitchen. And these people did their job, built the kitchen, bought the materials, bought the, you know, ate the labor costs, did everything they could do. And then they say to them after, oh, we're going to give you $2,000 instead of $5,000.
Right.
We just change our minds.
Right.
So that's the real analogy here. And this idea that just because...
But you don't have to throw in the toaster.
That punitive. Yeah, it's not that punitive. Yeah, that they'll throw in a toaster is just crazy.
And, you know, you mentioned in your piece that the State Policy Network, which... we spoke to Pilkington the other day, Ed Pilkington, about them, and as well as Alec. This has been one of their sort of key projects, and we're seeing this across. You know, like I said, Grover Norquist was on this 5 years ago or 4 years ago, just spouting out demonizing public sector workers. And when you demonize them, this is, you know, you're laying the groundwork for this type of thing. We're not going to see any other states, or we're going to probably see, let me put it this way. I would imagine we're going to see other states make this move, and just to see how it plays out, in the courts, because this could, like you say, this could take a long time in the courts, right?
Yeah. I mean, we already have, you know, Rhode Island did this to, their state workers. California, passed a law that, state workers have to pay more into their retirement, their pension funds. We're going to see this. We're going to see this everywhere. And what we're really going to see is, as the confidence in making these bargains goes down, what we're really going to see is conversions of these pension funds into 401k-style plans. And we know this because that's exactly what happened in the private sector. Private sector pensions basically have gone away, and they've been replaced with these 401k-style plans. So instead of the pension fund holding the money, which is $3 trillion in state pension funds, that will all be pushed onto Wall Street, and the mix of the types of investments that will be made will be notably different, I believe. If you have Wall Street investment managers looking to make a quick buck handling 401k plans rather than public pension funds who are a little more judicious with money, they fund more long-term projects, and our biggest activist investors are public pension funds who actually go to annual meetings and try to improve corporate governance. That activist would be gone if you would get rid of public pension funds entirely.
All right,
and
well,
so there's a whole host of implications here to the end of public pension.
Just walk us through this just a little bit more so that people understand. When you have a public pension fund, for Detroit or for a state or for, and in fact, one of the things that Elliot Spitzer was talking about in becoming comptroller of the city,
right,
was that he was going to use that fund in a very activist way, going beyond even where it's done now. But so you have basically a fund manager who then sort of ostensibly, and there are times where pensions get ripped off. We're seeing a lot of, basically civil lawsuits against the people who have ripped them off. They go in, they deal with the investments, and like you say, many of them are much more long-term because they don't need to be as aggressive. 401k, I'm just giving it to any old individual broker, and if I'm lucky, I got a good broker who's looking out for me. If I'm not, I'm getting one who's just trying to use it as a way of soaking fees out of me.
Absolutely. I mean, if a public pension fund think of it on a whole host of issues. There are divestment campaigns. I mean, we just had with the death of Nelson Mandela, we talked all about these divestments. The divestment campaigns largely came through the pension funds of higher education or state teachers' pension funds, and they divested in businesses that did business with South Africa, and that had a major impact because there's so much money tied up in these public pension funds. You see that on other levels with cigarette companies or with gun makers. I know here in California, the treasurer, Bill Lockyer, said that they were going to divest the state pension funds away from gun makers in an attempt to force the issue on gun control. There are a host of issues where the holder of those funds can afford, if they're the largest investors in some of these major companies, they can afford to change public policy. They have the ability to do that. If it's just going into Wall Street investment managers, you're just not going to see that same kind of force there.
Is it? What are the chances that the union, instead of getting pushed for its individual members into 401k plans, what are the chances that the union steps in and says, okay, we're going to negotiate obviously for higher compensation now, right? Or attempt to, because we're no longer going to be suckers. And, we're not going to say we're going to forego a dollar today so that you can give us $2 or $3 in 30 years when, 15 years from now, you say,
promise.
Yeah, we're screwing you.
The key word there is attempt, right? Because cities and states love the idea that they can defer the compensation because it lowers their budget in the here and now. And it's not like they have a lot of headroom in their budgets to give larger amounts of compensation up front. Most of these cities and states are fairly cash constrained. So I think attempt is the big word. I think it would cause a lot of labor strife, actually, if you have this situation come to pass. So I'm not confident that it'll all just change, and people will get higher wages up front, and they might not get these promises on the back end, but they'll be able to use their money themselves, and everything will be better. I just don't see the math does not work that way, really.
What are the chances that the unions start setting up pensions? I mean, I know that with AFTRA.
I mean, they do now in some ways, yeah. So that's certainly possible. I think it would be a brave new world if you go into this new thing. And I don't think the likely outcome is necessarily going to be a good one for city and state workers.
All right, so... let's move a little bit east from Illinois, where state workers are getting screwed over, to Washington, D.C., where we see that federal workers have taken so much abuse. Really, I mean, since the pay freeze, what was that now, 3 years ago?
Almost four.
It's stunning. And this is the budget deal, the Ryan Murray budget deal, which looks by all accounts to be something that looks like it's going to pass. And, you know, we can talk about whether or not this deal was lost the day, I think it was Noam Schreiber wrote that this deal was basically lost the day that Congress took up reversing the sequester for the FAA. And I think there's something to be said about that. But tell us how federal workers are getting screwed again now in this deal.
So in the Ryan Murray deal, new hires, federal workers hired after January 1st, will have to pay an additional 1.2% toward their retirement. Now, the money doesn't actually go into their pension fund. It goes to reverse the sequester. Or reverse a portion of the sequester. So it's not like the money is sitting in the pension fund somewhere. It's all just being, you know, siphoned away. This doesn't sound like a whole lot, but you have to put it in context. Number one, starting in January 2010, there's been a freeze for federal workers. So they have not seen a pay raise sometimes in as much as 4 years. There's a 1% pay raise that's scheduled to hit in 2014 for these new hires. That's essentially wiped out by this additional contribution into their pension funds. The federal, in the fiscal cliff deal, new hires already had to add 2.3%. In an increase to pay into their pension fund. So now the difference between a federal worker who was hired before 2013 and a federal worker who will be hired after January 2014, before 2013, those workers pay 0.8% of their salary into the fund to pay for their retirement benefit. After 2014, it's now 4.4%. That is a 3.6%, and it's a straight wage cut because the benefit doesn't change. And that benefit is pretty meager. It's $12,800 a year on average. So that's a 3.6% wage cut just on the paying in the pension benefits. Now, you add to that the fact that they haven't had a raise in 4 years. You add to that the fact that there were furloughs as a cause of the sequester, which were unpaid. You add to that the government shutdown, which cost 2 weeks' salary that was eventually paid back, but the work still had to get done, and there wasn't additional personnel being hired or funds being raised for that purpose.
So, in other words, and, people are working longer hours.
Exactly. So the American Federation of Government Employees, which represents most federal workers, estimates that since 2010, federal workers have given back, in the name of deficit reduction, $113 billion. And now here we come again to raid their you know, basically to cost federal workers even more in the Ryan Murray deal. So it's become sort of a cookie jar for politicians in Washington that if they ever need to pay for it, well, let's just go smack federal workers around again. It's really incredible that, and it's going to have an impact in the future on, I would say, hiring, on recruitment, If you continue to pay federal workers less, less and less and less, you increase the possibilities for corruption. The difference between the public sector and the private sector is that stark. You entice whether it's the revolving door or just straight off paying for access, you entice that kind of behavior.
And do federal workers? I mean, what's their Social Security status? Are they paying into Social Security as well?
They do pay into Social Security. It's a three-part plan, basically. They have the pension. They have a 401k-style thing called the Thrift Savings Program. Although with all these cutbacks, it's unlikely they can fund the Thrift Savings Program with their own benefits. They're basically, because they're getting their pay cut, if to maintain their standard of living, they have to pay less into their 401k. So it doesn't just affect the pension, it affects both sides of that ledger, and their Social Security as well. But it's more of a near-term wage cut. It's really wage theft rather than retirement insecurity necessarily. The benefit, the net benefit, at least for federal employees, non-military, is the same. Now, military pensions also got cut in this budget deal, Ryan Murray, by about $6 billion. They changed the COLA, the cost of living adjustment, for military pensions. They put it 1% under inflation, I believe, is the new COLA benefit on military pensions.
So we have two things that are at play. One is just essentially what amounts to a pay cut, because you're getting you're paying more into a defined benefit pension, and then military vets get actual cut in their pension benefits.
Yeah. And that's people who've asked to, you know, spend in basically career military is who that affects, because it takes a long time to vest in and get a military pension. But the larger point here is that it's almost a cookie jar, as I say.
Right.
Anytime they need a pay for in Washington, they want to pay for some other program, it seems like the offset always goes to federal workers. This is the second time now, the pay freeze. And when you're talking about reversing sequestration, which would have been harsher and does also affect mostly personnel and federal workers, you're telling federal workers, all right, we're going to relax some of the constraints of sequestration, but you're going to pay for it. I mean, you're going to pay some of the costs of your own sequestration relief.
And then there's obviously, I mean, supposedly this deal is going to last two more years. Well, it is for 2 years. But there's no, yeah. You know, the precedent's been set here, right? I mean, if no one's, if this is a good place to go and take a whack at somebody, why not take a whack at them in the future? Because nobody's crying out about it. And we should say,
right. And,
go ahead.
Well, it's the perfect plan, right? Because those workers haven't been hired yet. So you're hurting people who have yet to sign on with the federal government. In the Paul Ryan passed the prosperity budget back in 2011, he proposed having federal workers pay 5.5% into their retirement. Now for new hires, we're up to 4.4%. So we're pretty much, we're four-fifths of the way there, in terms of what Paul Ryan wanted in the lamb-basted, austerity, fever-dreamed, right-wing budget. We're almost there. And after attrition sets in and older federal workers retire, that's going to be the standard. It's going to be 4.4%, and soon I expect that before long we'll probably get to 5.5%. If they ever need money again, it's certainly seen as an attractive target.
But you know, the right wing in this country, they're losing, right? Because people make fun of the how crazy they are.
Right. Exactly. Even though if you look at the numbers, Paul Ryan's budget, his initial 2011 budget, called for something like $1.037 $1 trillion of discretionary spending in 2014. And everyone said, oh, that's completely harsh. We could never do anything like that. Meanwhile, this Murray-Ryan budget calls for 1.013. So it's actually under where Paul Ryan wanted to be 3 years ago with his right-wing budget.
And we should say, you know, I mean, I said this many times in this program as well, during the Reagan, Bush 1 and Bush 2 and Clinton terms, we had somewhere between 1.2 and 1.9 million new public sector jobs. And during President Obama's term, we are down nearly 750,000 public sector jobs. Just to give you a sense of,
I believe if you had public worker employment at the same level as it was during the Reagan administration, you would actually cut, I believe it's one full percentage point off the unemployment rate.
Well, I mean, just off on its face, you're talking about an extra, I mean, at the same rate, we would have been growing. We'd have an extra 2 million jobs, period. But that's obviously been the big drag on our economy, never mind the sort of the multiplier effect of having the more people you have employed, the more people, employment begets employment is the bottom line. And because it starts to create demand. So it's both unsound.
Right.
I mean, you know, this is without even getting into the whole sort of we've cut the deficit at an alarming rate. And it's alarming from an economic perspective. It's also sort of unprecedented in the last, well, just since World War II, since Eisenhower,
right.
I guess.
But you know, the unemployment rate came down to 7%, and 6 years after the crisis, 2014 might have modest growth. So austerity works. Is how you have to look at that, I guess.
Always cheery to talk to you, David. always cheery. This, I mean, what's happening? Is there any political price, at least in Illinois, that the Democrats feel they're going to pay, or no?
You know, I talked to the head of the AFSCME union out there, and. You know, 2014 is an election. They don't necessarily know what's going to be done, but I can tell you that it's probably the case that they will make a decision that handing over the reins of government to Republicans would be worse, and so the lesser evil are the people who just led the way in cutting pensions despite a constitutional guarantee against that.
You know, this is part of,
you can just see it happening.
This is part of a broader dilemma, particularly, I mean, I was trying to get at this in the conversation we had on this program yesterday, was that particularly, it's a particularly acute for unions here, right? Because if they do have a Republican in office, and let's say, for instance, that this this court case somehow, I mean, I really don't know how it would be the case. But that somehow this is legitimate constitutionally to the Illinois state court, but constitution. But I don't know the constitution that well in Illinois, obviously. But for unions, it's particularly an acute problem, right? Because if Republicans do take over, it will actually demonstrably be worse for the people that they represent. I mean, demonstrably.
Right.
And it basically undercuts dramatically their leverage here. They, you know, it makes it much harder for them.
It's an age old dilemma, especially since and Democrats use it to their advantage, right? I mean, they know that unions essentially have nowhere else to go, and so they can appeal on social / tribal lines to build a coalition of you know, various other facets, and they can say that you know, unions have nowhere else to go, so they can be economically conservative and not fear any retribution. I mean, I guess the best thing for unions to do is to fund and endorse and support those who actually have shown themselves to be on board with an economically populist agenda. But it's a very difficult situation for unions, particularly in the public sector, which has really been slapped around over the last few years.
David Dayan, like I say, always a pleasure, buddy. Have a great holiday season and a good new
Thank
year.
You.
And we will, I imagine, talk to you quite a bit in 2014.
All right. Happy holidays. And,
okay.
And you know, I'm on your side in the war on Christmas.
I appreciate that, buddy.
I'm with the battalion.
The forces are amassing as we speak. All right. Talk to you later. David Dayan, folks. Just a reminder, this program relies 98% on your support. If you want to help this program continue and flourish in 2014, you appreciate the work we're doing, become a member today at majority.fm. Don't forget our Credo sponsorship. I know that email we sent out yesterday said December 12th, but it's actually... the deal lasts to December 14th. There'll be another deal, but I'm not sure what it is. So you go 25% off of unlimited data for 2 years, up to $350 credit on your Credo bill for switchover fees. And Credo is now featuring new phones. They are not limited to Android phones, folks. And these are new phones. I can't be explicit, but they are phones that people, I've gotten a lot of emails in the past saying, if Credo offered these blank type of phones, then I would be interested and I would do it. But I really love my blank. So check it out. Go to credomobile.com/Sam. We got a link and a graphic on the homepage at Majority FM. JustCoffee.coop, Fair Trade Coffee, Tea, or Chocolate. Majority Report Kickback.com. That's where you can click on the Amazon link. Bookmark it. Always buy your Amazon crap through that link. We get a kickback. That's why we call it Majority Report Kickback.com. Give us a review on iTunes. And don't forget, if you want to choose what the best of 2013 was on this program, go back to the beginning of the year. Tell us something we hadn't thought of. Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com or tweet us at MajorityFM on Twitter. Let us know as we compile the best ofs. All right, folks. See you in the better half. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. What about the best ofs?
Well, should
I just said that?
You just said it. Oh man, I was looking at. I was going to send you something right now. So
not
I'll send it to
sleeping.
You. I wasn't sleeping. I was reading something. I'm sending you now.
Did we mention best ofs?
Listen, kids. If there ain't kids listening to the program right now, I want to warn you. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Santa Claus. And there's a question as to what color he is, and I don't want to freak any kids out. So.
Also Jesus.
And Jesus. So, you can IM me at Majority FM, 646-257-3920. See you in a second.